Welcome to the Strategic Investor. Join us as we interview some of the world's most productive asset managers and uncover sophisticated and unique investment strategies in the markets. Here is your host, Charlie Wright.
Hello and welcome to Strategic Investor Radio on OC Talk Radio, where we bring you investment strategies you are not hearing elsewhere. We'd like to welcome today, for the very first time, Carlin Conklin, Executive Vice President and Principal at IMG, the Investment Management Group, a syndication of investors to acquire value-added multifamily properties throughout the U.S. with headquarters in Woodland Hills, California. Carlin, welcome to Strategic Investor Radio.
Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate being here.
So, Carlin, you came with an MBA from the University of Oregon, so you're a duck, and you've had your entire career, I understand, in commercial real estate. And in addition, you've been the director of the Lindquist Center for Entrepreneurship at the University of Oregon and taught marketing and entrepreneurship there. So give us a 30-second background of yours, will you?
Yes. So my background is in operations. So before I did commercial real estate, it was operations and improving operations for larger companies. Did teach entrepreneurship. Had a lot of good times helping to launch breweries and companies such as that. And then when the end of the 90s happened, I looked around and I saw that all the growth was in something that was not tangible, like dot-coms, and made a very important decision that I wanted something tangible, something that was operational-based, and that's why I launched into investment real estate and commercial real estate. So I've been in commercial real estate since about 2000.
Okay. Well, congratulations for surviving in a challenging era here. So tell us about IMG, the Investment Management Group. What is the strategy you guys follow in doing value-added multifamily properties? And kind of what sets you apart here?
So Investors Management Group, I have two partners, Neil Schimmel, who is a 30-year real estate veteran, and Mark Gordon, who is our partner in capital markets person, financial person. Our strategy is this. We are looking through multifamily real estate. We're looking to add value to that real estate, and by adding value, whether it's improving a property, it's improving operations, what we are able to do is create a better community for our tenants. And we are able to create value and growth in the capital that our investors invest with us. We, at the start of this cycle, right after the downturn, all of our investors were institutional partners. So we were doing large family offices, you know, institutional partners with funds. We were buying properties early in the cycle in, you know, 2010, 11, 12, and so on. And as the this cycle is maturing, what we began to see is that the institutions, we were moving in a different direction than our partners. Our partners were wanting to buy quick. They were wanting to drive the property's value up as the market was coming up. And we did incredible. Our partners did incredible. We were getting 25, 35, 40 IRRs. But it was a quick move. And as the market started changing, what we began to realize is our capital niche that is not being met or was not being met are for those accredited investors who are more mature. They are looking for a good operator and a good sponsor, and they're not into quick, you know, let's do a quick flip. Let's place 1031 money. So exchange money from the sale of other property, or let's just invest and let's grow over time, maybe a 5 or 6 year hold, reasonable returns as the market has matured. And that is what we are doing today. We are working with accredited high net worth investors who are placing anywhere from 25,000 to 2 or 3 million with us. In the acquisition of value-add multifamily real estate.
Okay, so tell us, Carlin, why are you in multifamily?
You know what? Because you can't teach old dogs new tricks. Is that the answer? Neil, Mark, and I, That's what we have always done. And, you know, even back in, for me, in 2001 and 2002, when I looked at commercial, you know, maybe I'll sell this retail center or buy this and that. To me, it felt highly risky because if something happened or an anchor tenant left, the investor or the owner could have a high risk if you could not fill that vacancy again. And at the end of the day, all of us need housing. We have to find homes. And so if it was retail or office, it could take 6 or 8 or 12 months to fill a vacancy, or if the market gets soft to try to break even. In multifamily, leases are relatively short. If you are having issues, you can always lower the rent, or you can add concessions, and so that you can fill your building. So for us, it was simply a decision early on of risk return. And today, it's because, you know, we consider ourselves expert in this field. So this is what we do.
Okay. What geographies are you in?
I know it sounds crazy. My office is in Portland. My partners are in outside of LA in Woodland Hills. And yet, we are national. So we have, but we focus on 6-7 metros is all in the country. We have properties in Portland, in Seattle. So those are our West Coast properties. We have properties in Denver. I happen to be doing this podcast from Denver today. We have properties in North Carolina, in Charlotte and Raleigh. We are also in Georgia and also in Florida. So those are the metros that we focus on.
And what are the size projects you do? How many units, the cost, the going in, et cetera?
So the economies of scale matter. So we can't make money at small buildings. That's not the company that we are. Our buildings are typically 150 to 350 units, where you can get a real economy of scale. We're looking at, pricing today, going in, or let's not do pricing, let's do equity. Our equity that we are raising for our buildings are anywhere from $12 million to $18 or $19 million per property. A lot of sponsors, such as ourselves, they will form a fund. They will say, let's raise $50 to $100 million, and investors place your money in the fund, and you will get diversification by us then placing that equity in multiple deals. That is not our model. Our model is we are raising money for each property separately, and in that way we can, of course, take exchange dollars in a tenancy in common model, but we raise next week we're starting on a building, and that'll be a $15 million raise, and, you know, a month later we'll do another building, but each building is separate. With that said, we have investors who place, you know, $100,000 in every one of our buildings, so they're getting that diversification themselves by going into multiple buildings, but we don't have a fund. We're raising equity for each building specifically.
Okay, and I believe that is a little bit different. So what mm-hmm. you have to do, Carlin, as we all know, is you have to raise money, okay?
Yes.
So what misperceptions do you see by investors or their advisors in investing in your type of projects? What do they not understand that you wish they understood better?
Here's the biggest challenge today, which might be totally different than the biggest challenge 5 years ago. But the biggest challenge today is investors have to temper their expectations of returns. They're looking today on forward projections, looking behind the boat. So just because we could get a 30 IRR or a 25 IRR, buying a property in 2011 and selling it in 2015, you can't do that today. Everything is different. Interest rates are higher. Competition to buy is higher. Regulation is higher. And so what we sort of give a mini, lecture to all of our new investors, and it's this. These are targeted returns off fairly conservative projections, but you need to understand, you can't say, I saw another pro forma, for example, that's projecting a 22 IRR, And we don't believe that's real because everything has moved. The interest rates are going to go up again. And so we want investors to understand that real estate, compared to the stock market, is illiquid. But secondly, they need to temper their expectations for the next part of this cycle.
Well, it sounds like conversations that stockbrokers have with people in the stock market these days.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Tempered expectations here seem to be kind of everywhere except cryptocurrency, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So what kind of protections do you offer to the investors in terms of loan to value of money that you borrow, et cetera, et cetera?
We are typically at 60 to 65% loan to value, and we don't go higher. We perceive that as risky. And you know, when the market collapsed in 2009 and started digging itself out in around 2010, back in that short period of time, what I did, you know, we're all looking for what do you do when the market is down that deep. I work with several lenders, and I sold notes, or I helped to do some workouts. Actually, Neil did the same thing. And what we found is, as a class of real estate, far less multifamily was lost compared to the other commercial classes. But the multifamily that was lost was because they couldn't refinance their loans. The principal was, you know, there was a loan maturity. They could not get a new loan. They couldn't come up to a difference between what they might get in the loan and what the property was worth that day. And they had no choice but to give their property up. That was the only resolution. And so what we try to do is, besides going with a little bit lower leverage, is we are trying to give our investors maximum flexibility so that they can make decisions not because of loans. And I know that might sound crazy, but let me give you an example. So pre-cycle, we were putting 10-year money, you know, we put 10-year money on almost everything. But when you put 10-year commercial money on, you always have yield maintenance or defeasance, and it's big. I mean, if you want to get out of a loan at 5 or 6 years, your prepayment penalty can be $1 million or $2 million. And that seems a little crazy. But also, if you are stuck with that kind of a prepayment penalty, you cannot be strategic in selling or refinancing, because every decision you make is not on the property, it's on what your loan is doing. I mean, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. And so what we do now with our loans is this. When we do an initial acquisition, we're putting on variable rate money with an interest rate cap, 5 years interest only, 10-year loan. So no matter what happens in the next 10 years, we at least know we have the protection of debt. And with the cap, you know, we're feeling pretty good about that too. And what we have been doing with our investor groups is, we start that way. You know, we're going to feel good about the property. We're going to feel good about the market. And we go at about 3 years into the ownership, and we'll do an analysis on whether we should sell or whether we should refinance and do a large cash distribution and continue to hold. And so in 2018, we had two of our investor groups decide to refinance with a cash distribution and hold. And we had one group make the determination to sell. So that's what we do with debt. Debt is a critical component of all of these, because leverage helps with your return. But we're doing it so that we can still make strategic decisions about the real estate, not just about what a loan is going to do to us.
Okay. Speaking of interest rates, okay, they're going to rise. We thought it would happen before now. It hasn't. In fact, last few days have even gone down. But they're going to be rising over the coming years. How are you prepared for that, and how do you see that impacting your projects?
The interest rate is going to impact cash flow, period. So our investor groups are, like I said earlier, today we do some JVs, but with most of our investor groups, they're high net worth individuals. I would say the average age of our investor is probably 60. A majority of our investors have owned multifamily real estate in the past, even if it was just a duplex. So they understand the elements of multifamily real estate. And so with these investors, they understand what's going on. And what we try to do is when we're structuring our deals is we're trying to structure so that we have a minimum of a 5% annualized cash on cash. And so we temper that and we give them what if scenarios on what would happen if something crazy went on and the interest rate on our loans went up to the cap, which is typically 5.5 to 5.75 for us, and what that would do to their cash flow. And they look at that and they say, you know what, I may not be getting the 7 or 8% that I want, but it still is a good cash on cash return. I know what the worst case scenario is. I'm satisfied. So our philosophy is that our best investors are investors who have all the information that we have. They understand their risks, and then they make an educated decision on whether or not to invest.
Okay. Now, speaking of your investors, you mentioned your high net worth individuals. Do you work with any institutions anymore? Do you work with primarily advisors, and they're the ones who are bringing you these investors? Or do you work directly with the investors?
Charlie, we do it all. So we have done, even in the last year, several JV acquisitions in which we joint ventured with an institution. So we are still doing some of those acquisitions. The majority of our acquisitions right now are in a tenancy and common model. And with that model, we are able to take 1031 exchange dollars. And so we will be contacted directly by investors who are in exchanges. We also have a very large database of our own investors, but then we do have we're contacted constantly by wealth management firms who would like to place some of their investors in what is considered now alternative investment, which is real estate.
Right.
And so we from wealth managers and wealth management firms and family offices, I would say any one of our acquisitions has from $1 to $4 million from wealth management firms such as that.
Okay. So let's change the subject just a little bit here, Carlin. What's the best advice you've ever heard, read, or received about investing?
Know the operator. And so somebody could buy or see an extraordinary piece of real estate, you know, let's just say in Boulder, Colorado. And that extraordinary piece of real estate, if it is not operated well, that extraordinary piece of real estate is very probably going to have a tenant base that declines. The quality of the asset could decline. And so what somebody told me was, you know, in commercial real estate, you got to know operations. And I'm like, I'm an operations person. I can do this. But it's also understanding that multifamily in particular, this is an operating business. There's income, there's expenses, there's a physical asset. And so knowing the operator becomes a critical part of the decision to invest, so that you know that I don't care if you're putting in $25,000 or $25 million, you know that asset is being taken care of.
That's great advice, especially for real estate. For other assets, if it's a mutual fund, it's a little bit different. But certainly for real estate, no question about it, I can recognize the value of that. So let's move on a little bit here. As we mentioned before, you've been the director of the Lindquist Center for Entrepreneurship at the University of Oregon. And while there, you taught marketing and entrepreneurship. Just briefly, tell us about that whole thing, will you?
Well, that was, you know, mid-90s. Back in the 90s, and if you can recall, and investors listening to this podcast, if you can recall, there was a shift and in just how people were thinking. It was moving into the whole telecom age, where this dot-com thing was, wow, look at this dot-com thing. And somebody could have a one-page business plan that said paper.com, and with this highfalutin, you know, if you have paper.com, you are going to be a tech millionaire. And people bought into it and they believed in it. But it was that kind of frothy in the, you know, up until, you know, late 90s. It was kind of frothy back then. But what was going on in the universities at that time was the understanding that universities and business schools were not keeping up with the times. They were just doing research. You know, the big universities were doing research. They were looking at, you know, we're going to do statistics and we're going to do marketing. We're going to do this and we're going to do that. But the market was going to go past them. And the client, which is the student, was going to go past them unless they really matched universities with what's really going on in the world. And so it wasn't just the University of Oregon. A number of universities recognized the need to go into entrepreneurship and understand that. And so I was the first director of the center. We had gotten from one of our donors a large donation to the University of Oregon and named it the Lundquist Center for Entrepreneurship. And the center, I was there for 3 years, and then with each subsequent director, that next person took the center to the next level, and it's been extraordinary. I mean, it has put the University of Oregon and the business school on the map. The students have done extraordinary things nationally and internationally, and it was a perfect example of how a university can look outside its walls and see how do we serve our students better by serving communities, and that's what they did. It was great. I loved it.
Well, that's great, and congratulations to you and others involved in that. And, you know, we no longer have the dot-com phase. What we have now is the blockchain phase. And so that's how companies increase value, is they put blockchain in their name, right?
Yeah.
And, and that creates value and opportunity for many of them here.
Right. And, you know, that is one of the reasons I love real estate, is that it is finite. You can't make more of it. You can't. I mean, this is the earth. This is what we have, and it's taking that piece of dirt and how is it developed and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, in what we do with multifamily, it's a community. It is, your apartment building is a community, but that community sits within another community. And it's critical. And so when we do value add, and this is how our investors think as well, we may buy a building and, let me give you an example. We purchased a building in Tacoma in mid 2014. It was a high rise. It was partially shuttered. So, floors were shuttered off. It had not been renovated in years. It overlooked Commencement Bay, but you couldn't see it because it was literally shuttered. And that area of the stadium district, I mean, you wouldn't recognize it hardly today, but in the stadium district was really grungy. People didn't want to walk there at night. And what we saw is, you know, in 2013, we saw that, you know, something crazy is starting to happen in Seattle. We don't exactly know what, but there's stuff going on in Seattle, and at some point people are going to be pushed south. And we looked at this building and we said, this is really, really rough, and it's an eyesore in this entire neighborhood. And we did the numbers, and we were able to purchase it at a very, very good price. And we spent, I don't know, $35,000, $40,000 a unit on that building. And we did it from the inside out, but changing that building and it changed the neighborhood, and it created an incredible community within the building. But what it also did was it also improved the community outside of that building. And that's how we think of multifamily, is that yes, it's a means for growing capital, 100% absolutely. But one of the important things is that when you improve a building, you 100% of the time improve the neighborhood, and that's very, very important to us.
You know, congratulations. Those are excellent, excellent points. And think of how many people have benefited by you guys going in and renovating and improving one particular building here.
Mm-hmm.
So question, Carlin, we'd like to ask all of our guests. What book on investing would you recommend for our listeners?
I hope I don't feel less learned than some of your other subjects here. I read all the journals, because again, it's that whole community thing. Multifamily is only as good as if you understand the dynamics within a community. So I read all the journals, whether it's Globe Street or Rental Housing Journal or CoStar or Kiplinger or the business journals in every one of our communities. I want to know what's going on in the community. I need to know what's going on legislatively, what's going on with neighborhoods, what's going on with jobs. I read all of those. So when I actually read a book, it tends to be either a murder mystery or the one that I just finished was Michelle Obama's Becoming book. I want to read about figures. Before that, I read the Cleopatra book by the biographer Stacey Schiff. So it's about the biographies in particular. How does a person change, whether it's a nation or it's a community or themselves, and make it better for other people? So when it comes to investing, I'm reading all the journals. When it comes to, gosh, Carlin, are you sitting next to the river and you are reading a book intensely? It's either a biography or a murder mystery. And sometimes those things are the same.
They can be. But I've got to congratulate you. That's right. We can't be singularly focused here. We need to be complete individuals, and doing other kinds of reading are very, very helpful. I say that, although I don't practice it very well, but no question about it. And staying up with what's going on in an industry and tangent issues with those industries, very, very important here, no question about it. So for those who would like to know more about IMG, tell us where they can go.
So you can visit our website, please, and that would be www.imgre.com. So at our website, you'll get lots of stuff about us, as well as if we have a recent offering. You can always call me, too. My email, my phone is 971-888-4010, extension 104. And via our website, you can always get my email address. And I would love to hear from anyone, whether it's questions or comments. That would be a wonderful thing. And, Charlie, if I can say one other thing.
Please.
So folks will ask me what my strategy is. You know, how did you get from here to here? And what I tell everyone is this. You need to start today. Don't wait for something else, or you want to buy this, or you want to do that. You have to start today. And so whether it's that the way you start today, because maybe you only have, $2,000 in a bank. So maybe today starting is that you are putting $100 a week in an account that you can't touch, or it's $1,000 a week in an account you can't touch. But you have to start today. And every investor I work with has absolutely been their strategy. I start today. And if you do that and you turn back 20 years later, what you're going to find is by starting today, 20 years from now, you will have doubled or quadrupled your money. And let me, Charlie, do I have one more minute to tell one other story?
Not a problem, Carlin.
Okay.
We're all ears.
Okay, excellent. There, because this one is very salient for just this moment, and I thought about it. We have an investor who put $100,000 in a building, and this was about 2003. And held that building, little building, held that building because, you know, the market completely collapses in 2009, and it starts digging itself out and sells that building in 2013. And so started with $100,000, never had any cash flow in the hold, ends up in 2013, so 10 years later with $300,000. Does a 1031 exchange. And then in 2013 puts that $300,000 in a 24 unit in Portland, Oregon. And this particular investor is, you know, sweat equity kind of guy. He doesn't take any cash flow. He puts all of it back into the building because the building's pretty rough and the neighborhood's rough. And he kind of believes my community philosophy. Rolls it. And now, you know, he's mid-60s, and he's like, I'm tired. I don't want to do this anymore. I want to sell this building, which he's prepped to do and is going to sell soon. So when it sells, he's going to have net equity of no less than $2 million. So what he would tell you is that when it took him a long time to save up that money for his first investment, and it was $100,000, yes. But $100,000, you know what, 15 years later is $2 million. And it hurt to get that $100,000 together to continue to roll, and he's done the sweat equity for 15 years. But now he's got $2 million. He'll probably put it into one of my syndications, and now he can sit back and he can get the fruit of his labor. But it's because at some point he started. And that is the philosophy that I want to, if I can impart anything to the listeners today, is start today.
Excellent point here, and especially focused on real estate. No question about it. It doesn't happen overnight, but that's an excellent example of the kind of thing that can happen. So for our listeners here, Carlin, final words.
Final words?
Yeah.
Start today.
Start today. Okay.
And thank you for your time.
Yep. Hey, thank you very much for being with us, Carlin. We appreciate it, and our best wishes to you and to IMG for continued success. So again, we've been talking with Carlin Conklin, Executive Vice President and Principal at IMG, the Investment Management Group. You've been listening to Strategic Investor Radio on OC Talk Radio. You can go to our website to hear podcasts of all of our interviews and shows, strategicinvestorradio.com. I'm Charlie Wright, wishing you an enjoyable week and productive investing.
Strategic Investor Radio is a production of OC Talk Radio and is provided for educational purposes only. Content of this program and the views of the guests should not be considered as recommendations by OC Talk Radio or investment advice from the host Charlie Wright or any other entity attached to this production. Investors should always consult qualified financial, investment, tax, or legal professionals prior to investing.